Welcome to the REF SCAD podcast, where we explore the intersection of faith and creativity. This month, we are with Erica Fabrizio. You got to put the T in there, right?
You okay. Got it.
You told me that a few months ago. That's where the Italian flair comes out.
Yeah, right? Like my mom always told me, like, when people are pronouncing your last name, you just tell them you say it like pizza with a T.
Truly the Italian flair, then.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you this month. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. I'm so happy to be here. So excited.
Right on the cusp of graduation, too, right?
Yes.
Man, we won't talk about that yet, though. Yet. All right. So tell us the fun, exciting stuff. Where are you from? How'd you end up at SCAD? What are you doing at SCAD?
All right. Well, I have perfected this field because I was a student ambassador for past 2.5 years, just my entire time at SCAD. So I can tell you in great detail how I ended up here. But long story short, I was born in New Jersey. I moved around a whole lot in my childhood, but I'm right now in Clark, New Jersey, which is a little town about 30 minutes away from New York City. I always knew I wanted to go into animation since middle school, pretty much. There was a show called Gravity Falls on Disney Channel that I was absolutely obsessed with, and it just changed. It basically, if you picture like a train track, and it's like they have that little lever that diverts the train into a different track, like that was the lever for me. And I went to a high school that specialized in visual media, graphic design path. They didn't have like one for animation specifically, but I was like, oh, graphic design is close enough. And from there, I met up with, like, you know, knowing I was going to art school for college, met up with a bunch of admissions representatives from all across the globe. And there was one from SCAD who came to a coffee shop about 30 minutes away from where I lived. And I was like, on a whim, why not? It's an art school. Let's check it out. And I came back from that meeting. It was only supposed to last an hour, ended up staying for 2.5 hours until the cafe closed. Looked at my parents, and I was like, this is where I want to be. And I did a there are so many things I did with SCAD. Like, I did a pre-college summer program. I was in contact with, like, admissions people, like, all the way leading up to my freshman year, which was fall 2019. And, you know, throughout COVID and all that craziness, like, I just kind of stuck with it. And now we are here in 2022, about to graduate. And it's been a wild ride, but oh my goodness.
So yeah, you've had a large chunk of years affected by COVID because you're graduating
definitely
early.
Yeah, I mean, I went, so it would have been fall 2019, winter 2020, spring. So it was like about a year and a half that I wasn't in Savannah.
It was pretty much half of your time at SCAD.
Yeah, half of my time split right down the middle.
Wow. You have mentioned Gravity Falls before, and you're not the first person that I've heard mention Gravity Falls as a Paramount part of the story. What was it about Gravity Falls?
Oh my goodness. I think it was the first kids show, like I say that in quotes, like kids right. show that really understood its audience. I was like at that cusp of like 12, like, you know, not quite a kid, but not quite a teen either. And it just came at the perfect time in my life where I was starting to realize all these things. Like there were like such strong character building, lots of plot development. Because I feel like a lot of the shows back in that day, like, you know, Adventure Time and Regular Show are kind of similar in that regard,
yeah,
where
right.
they started doing plot-driven shows for kids' cartoons. And, you know, the trend still continues today with, mm-hmm. like, things like Owl House and, like, all these amazing shows that I absolutely adore to pieces. But Gravity Falls was the first one that, like, really struck a chord with me personally. And it just kind of made me realize all the possibilities that animation had to offer. And I think it was just, I got so obsessed with the show to a point where I was, like, just watching every single YouTube clip I possibly could, like clips from the episodes. And then I came across the behind the scenes shows or clips that they had for each episode. And that was the moment I realized, I was like, wait, animation is a job. And this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And it was just like absolute mind blowing moment.
Because that's the piece I was wondering about, how that got translated from this connects with me as a story and mm-hmm. as a piece of art into this is what I want to make and create. Like, yeah. how did that piece connect?
Honestly, I feel like a lot of large chunk of it was just from curiosity. Because, you know, I was kind of like an overprotected kid growing up. So I was thinking all about, like, you know, the shows that I grew up with. Like, you know, they're pretty, like, I don't know. I don't want to say basic because that sounds mean, but they're pretty like, that's so mean.
What's wrong with being basic?
No, nothing's wrong with being basic, but I think
I feel attacked.
No, I don't want to say it like that. We can edit that out. And I say that very lightheartedly. We don't actually have to edit it out. But I think it was like the it almost, like, I don't want to say it, like, treated me like an adult, but it challenged a lot of the things that I kind of had come to accept for, like, storytelling and characters. It's like, it could be so much more than what is presented. Like, you know, a lot of, like, the early 2000s cartoons, when they're developing characters, like, a lot of them kind of fell into those, like, stereotypes and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then just having, like, the plot-driven episodes, I really feel like the writers on that team had an opportunity to just really flesh out each individual character in a way that was never, had really never been done before. But, oh my gosh, I just, this show is amazing. Like, I truly am so obsessed with it to the point where it's, like, I have, like, all the special edition merchandise.
I believe that.
This is a fun story. So I actually got the creator of the show, Alex Hirsch, who is, like, my animation role model. He gave me my senior quote for high school.
Nice.
And
nice.
I, like, tweeted him. I was like, hi, like, with a picture of, like, my senior photo with me, like, posing with my diploma. And it was like, hi, Alex Hirsch, please give me a senior quote. And he did. And it was, like, the coolest I remember, like, getting the response back from him, and I was, like, running around my classroom, like, screaming, and I was, like, trying to, like, phrase it into words because everyone was very concerned. I wasn't even making words. And it was just, like, absolutely, like, just the coolest moment of my entire life to date.
I thought you meant when you said that it was, like, something he had just said in an interview.
Oh, no.
I didn't realize you meant what was the quote? If you don't remember it, I'm going to be very disappointed.
Oh, no. I remember it. So he goes, help, I've been transformed into a senior quote. I'll be trapped in this yearbook forever. Find the wizard and free me.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
That's pretty meta, too.
It was absolutely iconic. And I just... and he also... this screenshot that I pulled up just to, like, reference the quote, it was on his Instagram story. And he wrote, this
cool.
is my legacy.
That's
and
so
I was like,
cool.
I'm his legacy.
How has this not come up in 3 years?
I
did not know that.
I don't know. I feel like I mentioned it in bits and pieces, but, like, never all together. Because when I start talking about Gravity Falls, I'm just, like, so, like... I think I'm, like, so overwhelmed by emotion that it's, like, hard for me to, like, really, like, pinpoint, like, everything that makes it so special. But it was just, like, such a cornerstone in my life
yeah.
that I was just, like, oh, my gosh. Like, just... I truly credit everything getting me up to this point. I was like, Gravity Falls.
That's amazing. Well, you mentioned part of it was, like, the seriousness of the storytelling.
Oh,
and maybe
yeah.
seriousness, like, legitimizing real things that, like, typically weren't present in kids' shows and the way they thought about characters.
Yeah.
Are there, like, specifics that come to your mind? Because clearly it impacted you.
Oh, 100%.
Like, can you think of, like, particular ways that show resonated?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, this is kind of towards the end of the series, but it's not necessarily a spoiler. But the last couple of episodes, I mean, the show premiered in 2012. It ended in 2016. So I was on, like, the cusp of high school. And for all of my life, I've, like, really feared growing up. Like, it's something that my mom will, like, credit this, like, vouch for me. She was like, you've been crying about growing up since you were six.
Wow. Yeah,
like,
wow.
It's always just been something. I don't know why I'm, like, so scared of it, but it was just something I never wanted to accept. So the last couple of episodes of Gravity Falls, they have Mabel. So she's one of the main characters. And I like to think of me as the real life version of her.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
I feel like we have a lot in common. But, like, you know, the last couple of episodes, like, she goes through this arc of, like, you know, she tries to do everything in her power to prevent her and her twin brother Dipper from growing up. And she realizes that it's just not the way to go.
Mm.
And I'm, like, trying to say this without giving any spoilers for people who haven't seen it. Because when I tell you, it's, like, one of the best things that Western animation has come up with in, like, so long.
This is quite the sales pitch, by the way.
It's, oh, it's, like, I truly can't... yeah, that, like, just that episode coming out while I was in high school, specifically, I was just, like, absolutely, it hit home. And I was, like, remember, like, just kind of lying in my bed after the episode premiered, staring up at my ceiling, and I was like, dang, that's pretty deep.
Because that's really, I mean, I'm trying to think of other pieces of storytelling for kids, especially in animation or things
right.
geared towards kids, that talk about growing up with a lot of complexities. Like, there are some... But I feel like it often kind of just alludes to it a little bit more.
They don't really...
Or it's not presented in a complex way.
Yeah, they kind of skirt around it a little bit because it's like... I feel like when you're making kids media, it's like, oh, kids will be kids forever. And it's like you're
right.
only creating content for kids. But
yeah,
I think
right.
that was like the first time I had like characters growing up alongside me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like... It's such a weird thing to think about because the series is going to be 10 years old this summer.
Oh, wow.
So I don't even like saying that because it makes me feel old. But it's truly like... like looking back on it in retrospect and everything, it's just having that experience. Like, there's certain medias that will like come out in your life, like movies, TV shows, that it just comes out at the exact right time that you mm-hmm. need it to. And Gravity Falls was that show for me.
Yeah. Something just clicked for me when you said that. I was thinking about 2012, which that was the year I graduated college. Mm-hmm. There was what for me did it that year. I think it either came out that year or maybe the year before was a movie called Boyhood. Did you ever see that?
I have never seen it, but I remember the thing was I've always been invested in like Best Picture, like, you mm-hmm. know, kind of like the awards hype before the actual ceremony. The problem is my mom was like, again, very strict with me growing up. So it's like, you know, you can't watch any R-rated movies. It's not appropriate for your age group.
Yeah,
but
right.
I would just try to get as much information just from the trailers and the synopsises on like Wikipedia and everything. So it was like, I wanted to be part of it and like just kind of like drum up my own hype for each individual movie.
Yeah, right.
But I remember hearing about it and just how like unique the filming was for that, because that was the
sure.
one where it was
yeah.
like, you know, it's kind of not necessarily a documentary, but it was just like, you know, you have the same actors over
yeah.
time.
It was like over 13 years I
exactly
think. That movie did the same thing to me that it sounds, maybe not to the same effect that you're describing with Gravity Falls, mm-hmm. but it's like it came out at the right time. I was just about to graduate college. I saw it with my twin brother. Oh. It was one of those things that treated this idea of growing up with complexity, and I think right. it came out around the same time.
Yeah.
I feel like that was connecting very much so when you're describing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
All right. So we'll jump back into your story, kind of post Gravity Falls, as you're thinking about SCAD. And did you look at other schools, or was it like I'm dead set on SCAD?
Okay. Well, after I did the pre-college program, I kind of knew in the back of my mind I wanted to go to SCAD, but my mom didn't want me to put all my eggs in one basket.
Sure.
So we did apply. I started applications to other schools. I had like
okay.
eight of them. A couple of them were state schools. Others were just other art programs. I never ended up sending them in. The only one I ended up sending in was UCLA. And this is another...
Really?
Yes, and
plot
I got
twist.
In. Yeah, I know. It was for a communications major, but you would have to apply as an undeclared social sciences. So I applied for that, got in. The only reason I applied, and this is just me admitting it here... So there's another show called BoJack Horseman
right.
on Netflix.
Right.
And one of the characters who I also very personally identify with, her name's Princess Carolyn. And she had a flashback episode that... You know, I think it was like part of season 4 or 5, and it came out my junior year of high school, so the right in college application season. And, you know, she was like, I applied to UCLA, like in the backstory, it's like she applied to UCLA. And I'm like, well, I'm Princess Carolyn. I can do that in real life too. And part
it's a
of it
persuasive
was
show.
It wasn't even persuasive in the sense. I was just like, I kind of just wanted to see if I could do it. And I was just like, I already identify with this character so much. And honestly, my backup plan, if I didn't want to pursue animation, I would have done something with communications and like, because my little sister, I like to call myself my little sister does theater, so I always considered myself her stage mom. So I was like, I could
okay.
go into like
yeah.
talent management or
yeah,
something.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm a people person.
I
like,
can see
you
that.
Know, I know. I was like, you know, I feel like that would just be the next natural fit, but you know.
I can see that for sure.
Yeah. So I, you know, that was the only other acceptance letter I got. And I think maybe I waited like 4 days before I sent, like, declined my admission to UCLA. And then I actually had already committed to SCAD at that point.
Yeah.
So I was just
so
like,
you were pretty much functionally set on SCAD.
Functionally set yeah. on SCAD from the get-go.
So you arrived fall, basically 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Tell me what that was like, because that was probably a big jump going
oh,
from,
yeah.
you know, Jersey to Savannah, Georgia, and a school that was totally just all in on arts. What was that like?
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. I think the biggest thing for me was the homesickness aspect.
Yeah.
Because the furthest I'd been away from home up until that point was the summer program, and that only lasted 5 weeks.
Right.
So I was like, here I was 10 weeks, you know, it seemed like an eternity in the point. I was really nervous about, like, you know, I'm a people pleaser at heart, so I was just worried about, like, I want to impress my professors, I want to make new friends. And I was really, like, overexerting myself and draining myself of, like, just... I don't know. I felt like I put way too much pressure on myself in the first 2 weeks. And I don't want to say I got to a point of burnout, but I would just cut to the point where, like, I would come home from class and I would immediately FaceTime my mom and cry to her for like 2 hours because I was like, Mom, why'd you let me go this far away?
It's a lot all at once. It really is.
Yeah, it really was. But thankfully, I had, like, it wasn't as big of an adjustment because I had friends who I did the program with over the summer, and we were all, like, suite mates and roommates and everything, so it's, like, I had people that I knew, and I was slowly starting to build my support system, and then, of course, when I discovered RUF, like, about, like, 3 weeks into fall quarter, I was, like, oh, my gosh, even more people that I can love. So it's truly, like, it worked out all naturally in the end, but I definitely, like, a lot of what I remember from that first year, at least for the first couple of weeks, is just like, I was so uncertain about so many things. And yeah. I just let that impact my happiness levels, I guess, for that quarter.
So how did you get to a point where, so you recognized like, this is not sustainable. Like, how did it come about where you started to, like, what began to change?
Yeah, I honestly think it all kind of came down to RUF. Like, truly saying that, like, because what happened was, up until that point, my Christianity was not really something that was my own, because I just kind of followed the rest of my family. Like, you know, we all go to church together, pile in the big minivan, and, like, you know, just kind of go whenever, like, everyone else would. So I was just kind of, like, following without really doing any individual kind of action, I guess you could say.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, going to that first RUF meeting, I was like, you know what? Like, I tried a couple of other youth groups on campus, but I wasn't really feeling that spark. So I was like, let me just try it. And that was like the first decision that I made that pertained to my faith. And that was like the start of it becoming more individualized. And from there, I was just, it really like just changed my perspective on so much, because I was like, I felt like all the stress just kind of leave when I mm-hmm. came into midweek, which we called it large group back in the day.
clearly a remnant of pre-COVID
this
times.
This is like my...
back when you could like, call things a large group and it didn't have a social connotation.
Exactly. I was like, I'm old enough to receive my senior discount.
Right, exactly.
Piece of trivia. But I think that... I don't know, like that was just really a turning point for me, because when I started meeting people who were like also in animation, also Christians, and meeting like-minded people with that, I just felt a shift. And it seemed like all of the problems that I had up until that point, like just stress from classes, just wanting to like please everyone that I crossed paths with, it just kind of dissipated. And I felt like the areas of focus that God wanted me to focus on in that moment were made like crystal clear.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. And everything just kind of fell into peace.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
I remember, I think it was the first time we met. It was the table at the Hive. Do you remember this?
I think so. Very vaguely.
It was, we were handing out donuts like we have done since then for freshmen.
Right.
And I think you met Claire first.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Claire helped me move in.
Yeah. Oh, like, that's what it was. Yeah,
yeah. Oh my goodness. All the way back in, oh my gosh, after the hurricane too.
Yeah. Oh man. I forgot that was the same
it
year.
It feels like forever ago, but it's all like coming back to me now that I'm thinking about it. But she was like the first person to help me move in. She was like, hi, like, you know, I'm like with RUF, like you should totally come join us for, and I was like, yeah, you know, like, cause, you know, freshman year, you want to say
sure.
yes to everything.
You're doing everything, that's right.
And then it was like, it wasn't until 3 weeks in, I was like, oh, maybe I should do RUF. I think, yeah. But the, yeah, the donut table. I remember seeing y'all.
Because I think I remember Claire saying, like, I met this girl, Erica. She's super friendly. And then I think we saw you from, like, across the table. I think you were walking, like, towards the bus or something like that.
Probably.
And she was like, Erica. And then you, like, walked over and you were just super friendly. And I was like, you were right, Claire. Like, she was just super friendly.
I'm very glad that's a key characteristic.
That was the first impression. It's like, man, Erica, she's, you're right, Claire. She's just super friendly. And it was true.
Bless him.
So what was it about your time early on in RUF then? I mean, you mentioned part of it was just for you to take some sense of ownership in your own faith. But what else about it was helpful in shaping the way that that quarter would transpire?
Without a doubt, just the community that I built from it. Yeah. Because all of the friends that I met like freshman year, like I still like keep in touch with them, whether it's through Instagram or just like meeting up every week. But I really felt like just an immediate sense of peace. And I feel like a piece of advice that I've like gotten told to me over the years was just like, you know, if you feel peaceful about it, that means it's from God. Like, so I really felt that, you know, having a support system of people who could understand just kind of, especially in just like such a, like very vast environment of like, you know, art school overarching umbrella. Like my mom was even like asking, she's like, are there even Christian clubs on campus? And I'm like, I don't know. We'll find out.
Right.
But it really came down to, having a group of people that could relate on such a specific level. And I have to mention her here because I am so excited for her to listen to this. Cause I feel, I knew in the back of my mind, I was going to come up, but, Anna.
Yeah. I figured that's where this is about to go.
Because when I tell you, this girl is, like, my best friend in the entire world. And, like, we wouldn't have met if it wasn't for RUF. And she, tying it back to Gravity Falls, the whole reason we started talking is because we had the big white van and she was sitting the row behind me and I was talking to Becca, I think, about Gravity Falls and just like rambling about it because I was on a tangent. And I feel like this tap on my shoulder and I turn around and she's like, "Were you just talking about Gravity Falls?" And I was like, "Yes, we're best friends now." And we literally have been, oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow. I don't even know where to begin with her.
Man, I figured that's where you're about to go. I also did not know that's how that happened on the white. I almost forgot about the vans.
I know. I miss it. Yeah. I'm like, I have my own car now, so I wouldn't have been able to like do the van anyway. And the walking groups are just as fun. But I was like, there's something sentimental about like piling into the white van on every Wednesday night.
I'm in another remnant of pre-COVID times. It really does feel like another lifetime.
It really does.
That's what was so funny about the vans is it really goes contrary to everything that you're taught for 18 years. Like, don't get in a stranger's vehicle, especially if it's a van, and go to an undisclosed place. It really does like fly in the face of all conventional wisdom.
I explained it to like some, like, you know, I was telling like my sweet mates, the ones I like knew before, like from Rising Star and everything. And I'd be like, "Guys, I'm off to youth group. I'm going to get in the white van."
Exactly.
And they were just like, "Huh?"
Well, I figured if Claire drove it, it looked a little more inviting than if I drove it.
Of course. I felt like immediately at peace. I was like, you know what? Like, this is fine.
Right. I'm glad you trusted us enough.
I did. Right off the bat.
All right. So you got involved in RUF. It sort of tempered a lot of the stress that you were feeling with just the pressures that are all around you with SCAD and sort of your self-described people-pleasing. Yet you were still doing animation. It's not like that stopped. Oh. So what was that piece like? What was it like suddenly jumping in to an environment where there was tons of people around you doing what you're doing?
Oh, my goodness. It was equal parts exciting and scary because the competitive nature in me, or like not that I should call it competitive, that sounds bad, but I really desired, like, not even perfectionism, but I really wanted to be like just top of my class in any sense. And, you know, I think coming out of high school being valedictorian, it kind of gave me like, I don't know, a bit of a, I don't want to say an ego. That also sounds mean.
Well, clearly you're thinking it, so we'll go ahead and say it.
Well, I don't know. It was 2019 me. I can roast myself a little
different
bit.
Different decade, that's right.
But I really was like, you know, coming in thinking like, you know, oh yeah, I got this in the bag. But, you know, it's exciting in the sense that you find people who like relate to the same things that you do. And you're like, you know, you're not, you know, the weird art student anymore because you're all the weird art students. But then I got into like my first animation class and I didn't take it until winter of 2020. And that was like a very pivotal moment for me because I was like looking at the work that people were like turning in. And, you know, I would like, we'd go for critiques and everything. Critiques used to scare me real bad. But I would like go into the classroom and I'm like, you know, like I start seeing like the first three people's like, you know, their little like 4 or 5 second animations, nothing too crazy. And I just have like that like pit drop in my stomach of like, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And I think when you're faced with like situations like that, I feel like you have kind of two opportunities to look at it or two ways to look at it. And this is something that I've like have personal experience with. So number one is just kind of giving up completely. Just being like, I will never touch that again. That's, you know, I'm not good at it. And it's silly. Or number two is just like, you know, okay, well, you know, if I keep at it, I can get better. And for all of my childhood, I was always number one with like, you know, option number one with that. Because my mom likes to tell the story about how I tried to learn to jump rope because I was so jealous of everyone in my class who could just like jump rope with ease. And, you know, my mom bought me like one of those little dollar store ones and she was like trying to teach me. But what I didn't understand is that I wasn't going to be a jump rope master within like 5 minutes of instruction. And I got so frustrated. Like, I was just like, this is stupid. I don't want to do it anymore. And my mom was just like, well, you have to practice it. And I'm like, but I'm not good. Like, you know, just like in the moment, it feels like so bad.
Yeah, sure.
But then it's like, you know, you start looking at option two and just, you know, trying it a little at a time. And I think it was about like a week before I could like, you know, I was doing like, you know, little 20 minute intervals of like trying to learn how to jump rope. And then finally after a week, I was like, Mom, look, I'm doing it. And it's like, I feel like I forgot that a lot. Like that was such a pivotal, like, you know, Inside Out, you have the core memories. That's a core memory for me.
Yeah.
But it didn't really come back to me. Like the moral of that story didn't come back to me until freshman year and that Animation 190 class of like, okay, well now I want to like get better.
Yeah.
And that's going to take work. It's not going to just be like, oh, I'm just going to come in with the best thing, but I'm just really going to push myself, try to make just make it to the best of my ability. And I know that over time I'll improve. And even just looking at work from last year, because I was like super new to digital art, trying to teach myself during a pandemic was not really the wave for it.
I can imagine,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, oh my goodness. That. But, you know, I like look at the work that I did last year and I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to redraw that now because I've improved so much. And it wasn't like, I don't know. I feel like my motivations when it's coming just from a really intrinsic, like inner place of just like, you know, I want to just get better for my sake, not to compete with anyone else. I feel like it makes your work more genuine as mm-hmm. you go along. So it was just like, I don't know. It was a nice little message.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it reminds me so much of even what we've been thinking through this particular quarter mm-hmm. is like the first three chapters of Genesis kind of set this paradigm for creativity.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like we would not be here at SCAD if we didn't have some inclination that there's something good about art and creativity and the process and the results of creativity. But if we're not asking what is it that makes it good, sometimes we can set ourselves up with these parameters that really can crush us. Like if the only thing that makes my creating worthwhile is that like I've got to make the best thing, and if it's not, then what am I even here for? It's like that will crush you, you know.
Yeah.
But for you to be able to do what you're describing and to recognize like the value of our creating as well, we're actually living out our status as image bearers and doing what God designed us to do by reflecting Him in our creation. Like suddenly that sets the framework a little differently, right? There's value in you making something and being able to recognize like, this is good because it's a reflection of me and I can still get better and yeah. I can still make good things, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that these other things have no value, even if they're not like the best in the class.
Exactly.
That's super helpful. Yeah. So animation is really broad, right?
Oh,
so
yeah.
What is it in particular with animation that you have gravitated towards?
I am so happy you asked, because I came in just knowing like I want to do anything animation. Like I didn't have a set, position that I wanted to do. I was just like, I want to just be anywhere. So I ended up doing the storytelling and concept development track within animation, because it's more of the pre-production things like storyboarding, visual development. And I still love storyboarding so much. That's kind of my, I guess, in terms of just putting it in a very general sense, that's still my main focus. But my gears kind of shifted towards preschool animation, specifically for TV.
Okay.
I really kind of had the realization during, while I was like working from home, doing like the online classes and everything, because I realized that for the storyboarding classes, just getting into like those major core classes, I realized that all of my projects were like centered around like little kids having adventures or like, you know, family dynamics. And I'm just like, wait a second. And it just kind of like, that was like the light bulb moment. I was like, oh, wait, this is like my niche. This is like my little sweet spot. So I really just want to work in preschool television animation. I also got really into screenwriting because I had two classes with the brilliant Eric Shaw. He worked on like SpongeBob, Word Girl. He won an Emmy. He's fantastic man. But he really helped me. I think he was like the first person that like also made me consider screenwriting, because I was like pitching an idea that actually ended up becoming my senior film was based off of the mm-hmm. idea that I pitched in his class. But I was doing a short film idea and just kind of, you know, reading it out to the class, like thinking nothing of it. And this was like 3 minutes to the end of class. He just stops everything. And he just goes, I could see that getting on the Oscars animated short film shortlist for like,
that's a pretty high compliment,
which was like the biggest compliment. I was like,
not like he would know or anything, right?
I literally like almost fell out of my chair and I was just like, thank you, because you know it's over Zoom and it's like, you know, I don't want to I'm just like anxiously like banging my knee against like the chair and like the desk and everything, and I was just like, couldn't even contain my excitement. But it was just a really like, I don't know. I think all of those experiences and everything I've experienced just with the animation curriculum as a whole, I was like, either writing or storyboarding for preschool animation is just where I want to be. And it's just like so fun. Like I love little kids so much. Like they're just like, there's something so special about that age group where it's just like the imagination, like, you know, believing anything is possible. And I think that there's like, especially nowadays, there's a really like, there's a lack of media that promotes positive values with that age group. So I'm just like, gosh, I just want to go like all in on it.
It's like the least surprising thing ever, I think.
Really?
Oh yeah. It's like, oh, that makes like too much sense.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about like going into like, you know, preschool teaching before too, because my parents are both teachers. So I always had like that education gene, like I guess passed down to me. But you know, since middle school, I was like babysitting, nannying, doing camp counseling for little kids, worked at an art camp. Like I've pretty much done every single childcare adjacent job under the sun. So I was just like, I felt like the natural combination of all the things that I really like care about and just like applying it to animation and just being able to combine the two.
Well, I have a newfound appreciation for that now with the 10-month-old at home.
Well, we were talking a little bit before about Bluey, and that was like another...
Yes, that was what was coming to my mind.
Yes, I was going to say, because like what Gravity Falls was for me growing up, I think Bluey is for me now. If that's like the weirdest analogy I think I possibly could ever
say.
Love
it, though. Keep going.
But it's truly like Bluey is such a special show, and it's... I'm far from the demographic of Australian preschooler, because that's what the show is geared towards. But they're so genuine and so heartfelt. Like, I can openly admit on here, I have cried at least half of the episodes from, like, season one to season two. And it's just, like, I don't know how to explain it. It's different from other preschool shows in the sense that... And it's almost similar to Gravity Falls in the sense it doesn't talk down to its audience at all. And it doesn't shy away from like the reality of situations almost. Like there's this one episode in season one. So Bluey and her dad are on a walk and they find a hurt bird on the sidewalk. And, you know, Bluey's like, you know, they take it to the vet and everything. And Bluey's like, well, is the bird going to get better? And the dad's like, I don't know. We'll have to see. And then, you know, I feel like I can put a spoiler alert for this, but at the same time, it's a 6-minute episode. So like...
And like,
summarizing.
And for preschoolers, right? Preschoolers. For all the preschoolers listening.
Yes, for all the preschoolers listening. Watch out. But then, like, you know, the vet comes back and it's like, I'm sorry, the bird didn't make it. And it's a lesson about grief and acceptance and everything.
That's
like,
actually amazing.
It hits you really hard, and it's like, you wouldn't expect a kid's show to, like, tackle those really concrete topics. But for Bluey, it just comes so naturally and from such a good place from all the writers. And it's like, when I started watching the show, I was like, you know, someone like, I forget who actually recommended it to me. I think I had like one of my friends in the animation department's like, Erica, I think you would really like this show. It just reminds me of you. And then I started watching it and I think I binge watched the entire first season in like a day, like just on and off crying, depending on like the seriousness of each episode. But I was like, this is really what I want to do. Like, it was just another, like, very powerful moment just with everything.
What I love hearing you talk about with Gravity Falls and also with Bluey is it feels like the thread that's in common with both of those is an appreciation for media that dignifies its audience.
Oh, yeah.
Even if the audience is one that we're not as inclined to think about as dignifying. Like, nobody's sitting here and saying we shouldn't dignify teenagers or preschoolers. But I think you're right. Often that's not an adjective or even a goal that I think we gravitate towards, or at least those who are making things for those age demographics. But like, what does it look like to dignify preschoolers? And like the real challenge, like preschoolers face challenges. Like that's a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what does it look like to reflect that in the things that we make for them? Like there's something really, really admirable about that. That's really cool.
I feel like it's very validating for them, especially because that's like such a, you know, I took psychology over the summer, like an online class, so I feel like all this information is still relatively fresh in my mind. But like the ages from like 2 to 6 are like one of the most pivotal moments in like, you know, a child like starting to create that like emotion, like personality, but also just emotional intelligence. So, you know, I feel like they shouldn't be necessarily sheltered from, you know, I guess sheltered from reality almost. Because it's like their life still. Like there's things that's going to happen that no one can predict. And, you know, preparing them on such a, you know, emotional, intrinsic level, I think would really help. Just, you know, not only in those formative years, but it like adds up over time and into adulthood.
Sure. I feel like we've danced around this a little bit already, but I'm curious for you. As a Christian entering into a world of creativity and storytelling, how do you find your faith shaping the way that you think about what it is that you make or what it is that you want to see in the stuff that you make?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good question.
I feel like you've already said things that are true of that. I guess maybe I'm wondering if there's any more. I mean, even what you just said, I think is inseparably connected to what it means to be a Christian.
Yeah. Man, that's a really good question. There's another cartoon that I'll just compare this to. There's a show called Wander Over Yonder. It was like another old Disney, or not old, but like, you know, 2012 Disney Channel show. And basically, whole plot of the show, this little furry orange alien guy, Wander, he just goes around the galaxy helping everyone who needs it. And, you know, this is kind of a weird metaphor to kind of like put in the context of like Christianity and everything. But I really just want to help people in any way, shape, and form. And I feel like a lot of media can kind of transcend, like, you know, the set demographics. Just if there's enough, like, heart and care put into it. But in terms of, like, how Christianity affects my work, I just try to, you know, in a subtle, like, not necessarily like an overt or subtle way, just kind of showing God's love through just anything I create. It's a weird thing to kind of just, like, throw out there, because I know there's, like, so many, like, implications or just, like, intricacies with that broad statement. Mm-hmm. But I think that just loving others the way God loves us through just putting out media that's, you know, engaging and, you know, heartfelt. I just think that's, at least for me, that's just the easiest way that I can share that with other people.
Yeah. There's two things that strike me about that answer. And the first one is sometimes when people, like, don't know what the answer to that question is, it's because they've never thought about it. For some people, when, like, the question's like, I don't even know what to say, it's because living as a Christian influences everything by extension so naturally. It's like, well, of course everything that I do is going to bear the marks of a Christian because it's who I am. Mm-hmm. The other thing, and I think this is what's so liberating about really understanding what the Bible says about creativity, is it doesn't necessarily have to have this very explicit, like, reference point in the story where it's like a wink and a nod, like, and this is like the Jesus figure in this story. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, well, there's a lot of things that Christianity underpins as good, like,
yeah,
God's love is at the center of all creation. Like, Jesus was in the beginning with God and all things are made through him, and he's a person who enters into the world and mm-hmm. is love incarnate. So, like, love is quite literally at the center of the story of God's creativity.
Yeah.
So when we create and love is something that is on display, it's like we're actually honoring him and what we're making. Yeah, no, I think that's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. So now that you are on the tail end of your time at SCAD, it means you get to do a lot of the reflective pieces of looking back and figuring out what exactly the 3 odd years impacted by COVID has meant. Maybe, like, the big broad question is, when you think about those 3 years, we'll kind of put, like, SCAD and then your time at REF together. Like, how do you feel like you've changed as a person since you've been here?
Ooh, I mean, I've definitely changed a lot. I think I've gone through, the pandemic was almost a blessing in disguise because it brought to light issues that I wouldn't have been aware that I'd had before.
Hmm.
I think, like, like, I know, how do I say this? like, I definitely, I don't want to, like, lie and say I don't feel resentment sometimes for, like, missing out on, like, a year and a half with, like, all of my friends here and at RUF. Oh, man. There were so many, like, good and bad things that came out of the pandemic. You know, like I said before, I would be lying if I said I didn't feel resentment sometimes just for missing out on a year and a half of, like, you know, everyone was hyping up, like, college, like, best 4 years of your life. That was already cut short because I came in with transfer credits and everything. So I was like, I knew I was leaving before, you know, most of my friends would. And then it was like, psych, and now you got a pandemic thrown in there too.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was happy to, like, be home, I guess, for spring quarter and everything, because I thought it was only going to be like, oh, like, you know, I'll be here for spring, summer, and then I come back in the fall and the next year. And then it wasn't over. And I think the time that I spent home, it was really tough. Because I have this thing where I make myself so busy sometimes that I don't really have time to think about things that make me anxious or sad or any of that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So having that kind of taken away temporarily, like, I can't say that I, like, would want to, like, I would want to change things, but at the same time, like, I have to try to focus on the good like, I already, like, I can tell you, like, you know, I love spending time home with, like, my family and my dogs and everything. I got really close to some of my friends back in Jersey, like, my high school friends and everything. I got, like, super duper close to Anna, because, like, most of our conversations, like, we just started texting, like, March 2020, and then it just grew into, like, the most truest friendship I think I've ever had in my life. But I think, like, just kind of seeing everything wrap up and looking at it in retrospect, it's just been, like, it's just, you know, it's a mixed bag. And, you know, there's no, like, you know, we haven't invented time travel yet. There's, like, I don't think I would, if I, even if I had the option, I wouldn't go back and change anything. But I don't know. I feel like this, I don't even know if this is answering the question, because I feel like I'm going all over the place with it. But I'm just, like, I'm just really blessed to have so many amazing people in my life. And I think, you know, I want to treasure the time that I have with them as much as I can. I'm so sorry. I didn't expect to cry for this one.
Here, like, just sitting here thinking, like, how just beautifully refreshing of an answer that is. Because what I'm hearing, I mean, I just think about how many people would be relieved to hear somebody say there was good and there was bad about it. And I'm not exactly sure how to reconcile these two things together. And I don't even know that I have a takeaway about what these things look like. I haven't figured it out yet, and maybe I will, but I'm not sure if I will. And I think there's just such a beautiful sincerity and honesty about that, of what it means to live what we talk about all the time, between the poles of the already and the not yet. Like, we can recognize what's good and true and worth celebrating, but there's still going to be challenges that we didn't anticipate, and we may not even be able to look back and know why it happened.
Like, yeah, I mean, I can, like, I don't mind sharing this story, but when I was in Jersey, like, with online classes and everything, I started going back to therapy because I had been since junior year of high school. And a lot of the issues changed since then, because I originally came in because I was, like, having, like, really bad self-image issues, self-esteem issues. Those kind of went away as I entered, like, freshman year. And I would, like, call my therapist, like, every month or so and be like, hi, things at SCAD are going great. You know, I'll see you when I go back for winter break. And then I ended up just staying in Jersey. And I think it was, like, March or April. It was, like, a couple months into the online classes, and she, like, I was just, like, talking to her just very honestly, and I was, like, I really don't know what's wrong with me. Like, you know, I don't feel motivated to do anything. Like, I miss my friends in Savannah. Like, I can't see my friends in Jersey, because at that time we were, like, almost on complete lockdown. And I just don't know what to do. So she was, like, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you fill out this questionnaire. And I was, like, all right. I like quizzes. Let's go. Like, that was just my attitude on it. And then, so she's like, you know, asking me about my, like, sleep schedule, like, you know, a couple of more emotional questions. And then, like, she's like, all right, I'm going to tally up your score. And I was like, all right, cool. And, like, you know, not knowing what it was. And she finishes, she looks up at me and she's like, well, according to this questionnaire, you are severely depressed. And I'm like, oh. And I was just kind of like, all right, well, because, oh, man. This is, like, going all over the place. That's, I mean, good. I'm excited to talk about it, but at the same time, it's like, oh, dang, it's getting, like, deep in here. But that was, like, a moment where I was just, like, you know, I kind of branded myself as just someone who's very, like, overly optimistic, like, you know, borderline toxic positivity sometimes, just, like, seeing the good in everything. And this was one of those moments where I was just, like, things can't, like, I can't ignore feeling sad forever. Because it's just going to get worse. And again, like, you know, I feel like it's just, this whole podcast episode is just me recounting, like, just very big wake-up calls from, like, just, you know, wanting to pursue animation to, like, now this. But it was definitely, like, a moment where I was just, like, I really need to take a different approach and kind of, you know, see the good and bad in things, accept both sides, and just kind of keep moving forward regardless. And, you know, keep moving forward. It doesn't mean, like, you know, even if you're, like, feeling super weighed down by just, like, everything going on in life, like, you still have to, like, push through it and, like, climb up the hill, like, you know. It means, like, you know, you can take a break. Just stop where you are. Take a breather. Pull out a sketch pad. Draw what's around you. And then, you know, pack everything back up in your backpack and just, you know, take a couple of steps forward. It's still forward. It's just not, like, full steam ahead forward. And I think that's part of the reason why this quarter specifically, or this year, just being back in Savannah has helped so much. Because I started falling back into my old habits fall quarter, and everyone was taking notes. It's like, Erica, you are overwhelming yourself. Just like, you need to chill for a little bit. I'm like, no, I got everything under control. Like, don't worry about it. But then I was like, I need help. And I just needed to admit that. And once, as soon as I did, like, I admitted it to God, admitted it to my friends, like, admitted it to, like, my family back home. And things really started to improve from there, because I was just being honest with myself and not trying to make everything, like, oh, it's, you know, it's bad right now, but it could be worse. And, like, you know, trying to, like, mitigate, or mitigate's not, I don't think that's the right word, but, like, just kind of downplay all the emotions and, like, you know, everything I was feeling. Yeah.
Here's what I think about that, Erica. I think two of the things that I have seen in you as I've known you for these 3 years, on the one hand, I think about, like, when you came by the donut table, I was like, oh, this person is super friendly. Like, she's just pleasant to be around. And then I think about, like, the stuff that you've just shared and, like, your willingness and your courage to be that honest and to dignify those types of challenges, knowing that people often don't see you that way. Pairing that with your desire to do what we've already talked about is, like, as someone with a young child, that makes me thrilled at the notion that they might see the stories that you tell. I just think that's incredible.
And I'm
grateful for your sharing those things, because I think that's incredibly difficult for a lot of people to do. And I think that probably fuels a lot of people to feel like they have a willingness and an ability to be honest too.
Thanks. I'm going to start crying again.
That's okay. That's what you get to do in the last few months, right? You have in the last few months to be as emotional as you want.
I know. I was going to say, I'm saving all my tears for June, because we have, like, you know, June 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and then that's, like, I'm like, all the waterworks can come out then. But, you know, we got the senior film coming out in, like, 3 weeks, and I'm like, I got to go, like, full steam ahead on that.
Man, that's so good.
Oh my goodness.
That's, you do get a pass the past, or the couple of months before graduation, because that's, yes, what we do, right? We get all sentimental.
Oh yes, 100%. I love being super sappy and, like, just, I don't know, showering people with just, like, I'm gonna miss you so much. Man, I love you so much.
So,
like,
true.
All that.
So good. Well, the question that I'm sure you've been asked incessantly since you're on the edge of graduation, what does future plans look like?
Well, there isn't anything set in stone at the moment. I have had a couple of leads, like, with interviews and everything. They haven't ended up going anywhere, which is totally fine, because I'm trying to, you know, I believe with all my heart God has something really great planned for me, and I'm just trying to, like, trust him with it instead of trying to take it into my own hands. But I'm looking at places on the East Coast so I can stay close to home. I, like, you know, New York City would probably be easiest, because I'm, like, 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
But I'm also looking at some places in Boston. There's a really great broadcasting company up there that I had an interview with during career fair. I'm friends with, like, the recruiter now. Like, we instantly clicked, and it was, like, it was a 10-minute interview. It just, like, flew by. It felt like 2 minutes. And she was like, oh, just, like, send me your resume and cover letter, and, like, you know, I'll get back to you on that. And it's truly, like, you know, my dad gave me some really good advice, like, when I was first starting SCAD, and he was just like, enjoy the journey. And it's just kind of been, like, a mantra that I've had, like, for all these 3 years of just, like, you know, I sense myself getting, like, you know, overwhelmed or anything. And, like, he'll be the one to tell me. He's just like, Erica, enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to apply post-grad too, of just, like, you know, I'm going to take it one step at a time. And just see where it goes. I applied for, like, another, like, couple of jobs yesterday, so we will see if there's any leads on there. But I don't know. I have hope for the future. It'll be good.
And hopefully it's refreshing for others to hear, like, you don't actually have to have your next 30 years figured out.
No,
the months leading up to graduation. Like, it's actually okay.
I was, like, crying to my mom about it. Like, even, like, last month, I was just like, Mom, I feel like I'm a failure because I don't have anything lined up so far this summer. And she's like, Erica, you still have, like, 2 months to figure it out. Or, like, one now, but, like, you know, time is, you know, things pop up when you least expect it, you know?
Yeah. You know what I was doing 2 months before my college graduation? We were routing a tour, because that's what we thought we were going to do. It's like, all right, we're signing up for 10 years of tour music life. And clearly I did not. So if you don't know, it's okay.
Exactly.
But it sounds like you got
some things
moving.
It's part of the adventure. Yeah.
That's right. Exactly. All right. So what are you going to miss about Savannah? You can't say the people. That's a cop-out answer.
Okay. What I'll miss about Savannah, I think, I think just walking everywhere. Because I live in, like, you know, metropolitan New Jersey, like, where it's, like, super dense and crowded. Oh, my gosh. Wait, actually, I'm changing my answer. I'm going to miss the traffic. Because Georgia traffic is literally nothing. I, like, don't mind driving, like, you know, driving on the highways, just driving places. Even when it's rush hour, piece of cake. When I go back to Jersey, I know for a fact that I'm going to be, like, crying behind the wheel because it is such a time. Like, I came back, my parents were driving me back from the airport when I came to visit for Easter weekend, and I was in the back seat, and I was stressing out for them. Like, I was like, there's too many cars here. There's too many lanes. They started construction on the Garden State Parkway where it's, like, a bunch of middle lanes are just closed off because they decided they wanted to add more of them. And it's like, I don't know. It's such a silly thing because I really do, like, find a lot of peace in just, like, you know, either in the passenger seat or in the driver's seat, just, like, driving on long stretches of road and, like, you know, like, on the highway and everything. Like, I find that so fun. And then it's like, I go back to Jersey and it's, like, going to be bumper to bumper traffic, like, any hour of the day. And I'm like, man.
I wish you well in New York and Boston then.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny that I say that. I'm like, I know it's not going to be the same in the city. But I don't know. Savannah, I feel like, had the perfect blend of, like, just, you know, Southern living, but also, like, a little bit of hustle and bustle that you'd find in any other city.
That's so, kind of how I describe it to people. Exactly. It strikes a very nice balance.
Yeah, it's, like, such a nice balance. And, you know, I feel like I'll visit, like, often enough where I'm like, I won't miss the surroundings, like, too much because I, like, come back to visit it as often as I can.
That's the deal. You guys are supposed to do that when you graduate.
Oh, absolutely. You know it.
That's right.
Oh, man.
All right, so what is, like, the... We'll do coffee shop and restaurant that you're going to miss most.
Okay. Restaurant, Rise Biscuits and Donuts, because their biscuits are amazing. Donuts are great. But their Righteous Chicken Box, I think that's what it's officially called on the menu. It is the best chicken tenders I've ever had. My mom is like a diehard Chick-fil-A fan, but she had like one bite of those tenders and she's like, these are like the best ones I've ever had.
So this is the real scoop.
This now is like the real scoop. Real stuff, I'm giving y'all a Savannah insider tip. They have the best chicken tenders ever. So I'm going to miss those terribly. And then best coffee shop. Oh, okay.
Ooh, this is I'm aware this is a divisive question.
It is a divisive question. I mean, I'm tempted to say Foxy because I love their kolaches, even though that's not technically, like, you know, coffee, but I just order it every time I go because it's really good. Claire introduced me to that one, so yeah. Shout out to Claire. Yeah. But also Savannah Coffee Roasters because they have the best iced chai, and I'm going to miss... Like, it has such a distinct chai flavor to it that I'm like, oh, I'm going to miss it a lot.
Those are both definitely REO staples.
Oh, absolutely.
Those are non-divisive answers. The fact that you said both of them also.
Yes, it's... It was sponsored.
That's right. Well, Erica, any parting words as you wrap up time at SCAD and get ready for what's next?
Well, you know what? I'm going to bring it full circle and I'm just going to quote Gravity Falls. It's also in my Instagram bio. Stay curious, stay weird, and stay kind.
That feels so appropriate. And how else could we have ended it?
I know. I truly was just like, there was no other way it could have been done.
That's exactly right. Erica, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so nice.